Have you had your soup today?
And the cold, crisp taste of Coke is so satisfying, it keeps me from eating something else that might really add those pounds.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Welcome to our episode of Sheologians. We are here today to put the her in were, like the past tense of are.
Okay.
I think it's going to end up in our title. I think it will.
Okay.
I think it's going to end up there. So you guys already know if you clicked on this. We don't know our title. You know more things than us at this point.
Wow.
In her journey. Yeah. My name's Summer Yeager. I'm here with my beautiful co-host, Joy. We want to acknowledge that our last episode didn't get posted till way, way late. I just want to acknowledge it because it was total just technical failure, technical difficulties. By the time you're hearing this, it should be fixed. I don't know how. I've reached the end of my usefulness in making this happen. I have delegated that task to the patriarchy because I don't understand what happened. But I'm sorry. And I want to say thank you to everybody who was so bothered by it. I actually appreciate that you were upset. That
right.
You
that you're like missed that we were gone.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I appreciate you. I appreciate that. And I should say too that I got to meet so many listeners last weekend in Kentucky. I wish you could have been there too, although you were here in Arizona having way fun.
Yeah.
But they all wanted to extend, several of them had like Joy quotes ready to go that they think about all the time. And I just really enjoyed getting to meet. I didn't tell you this. I met the original Snodgrass.
You did?
I got to hug
her. Wow. Well, that's an important event.
It was so cool. The sweetest gal and her sister and her mom, they came. They drove the hour and a half to come to where Eric and I were speaking. And they're just wonderful and sweet. And it was just really special. And people were walking up wearing your designs on their shirts. And it was just... It was a really good experience. So we love meeting y'all, and we're obviously kindred spirits. I do laugh. I know you've experienced this too, but when you meet listeners, they don't think to introduce themselves.
Right.
Because they feel like they know us.
Because we're just old friends.
Yeah. And it's so funny every time. It's so funny. I always have to ask, what's your name? Because we hang out all the time, so it's like weird.
Right. Well, I wonder what that will be like in eternity. Do you think we'll just stop asking each other's names?
Whoa.
Or just call each other like sister and brother?
Oh, that's
or
weird...
will we just remember everybody?
What language will we speak? I don't know.
I'm sorry, but the American in me wanted to be like English.
I would love to hear like the first language. Like, what did Adam speak? What was Moses?
Wow, yeah.
I'm sorry, not Moses. Noah. What language was Noah speaking? What language were they speaking at Babel? You know, like I want to hear it.
Yeah.
And I want to know. Yeah. That would be so cool to, and maybe I will. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe someone out there has an intelligent thought about that, but it's not me.
Yeah. Well, I know that I don't know what the timeline of it is, but I do know that Ken Ham is doing some sort of Tower of Babel
thing.
Which a lot of at first, a lot of Christians were like, why would he, like, didn't we kind of already get in trouble for trying to build that? Like, why would you build? But
It went
if
great, so.
it's, well, and it's very important to like genealogies and dispersions and different languages. So it's actually for what he does, which is creation type stuff, it's like, oh, that's actually a really important part of like how we got to where we are now. That's a big
Yes.
moment, big moment.
Yes.
But yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That's all I have to say. Kentucky was, it was so fun to meet you guys. And I'm just so thankful for those of you who made long trips out to say hi. It really meant a lot. I think I've said it a million times. I think of Sheologians as this fun thing I do with my friend. And so getting to
Yeah.
hear other people interact with it is a very humbling, and I'm grateful. And what was really cool was, and I said this in my talk, something to the extent of like, when you meet like-minded believers, like you just click, like
Yeah.
you have all the important stuff in common already. And so you just click. And I truly just felt that way the whole time. I was like, oh, if you and I went to the same church, we would be friends. Like, if we lived in the
Right.
same part of the nation, we would hang out. Like, we would be friends. And that's genuinely how I felt about everyone that I met. And so it's just a blessing.
What was your talk on?
Yeah. So they wanted me to talk about feminism in the household.
Okay.
And I kind of waited until I met people at the conference to decide where I wanted to go with it, because
Right.
context is king. And so I really felt like, okay, I'm truly in a group of like-minded Christians, and so I don't need to make the case that feminism
Right.
is bad. I wanted to talk about like just real practical things to keep in mind if you genuinely do not want a feminist influence in your own heart and therefore in your household.
Right.
So I definitely talked about, you know, in your own church, in the household of God, how do you love one another, build each other up, strive for unity, and things like that. I talked a lot of methods versus principles, which I think we should probably do a whole episode on, because
Yeah.
that keeps coming up in my conversations with women, is just
Yeah.
confusion between methods versus principles, and feeling like, you know, what's the lowest hanging fruit is like, do I have to make sourdough? And it's like, the answer is no.
Right.
Do I think it's fun? Do I think it's a great way to love your people? Yes. If you hate it, you don't need to do it.
Yeah.
If you don't want to
Nobody
do
wants hateful bread.
it, nobody
That's
want, yes.
hateful bread does not taste good. It doesn't taste good. I'm
Right.
sorry.
Right. And you know, I think a lot of that came up in the recent kind of trad wife blow up of just like, there's a principle that you can be dogmatic about. So you should love and serve your family. I feel that that is a Christian principle that I don't have to apologize for saying. What that looks like in your home, the methods by which you accomplish that task practically are not determined by anyone else. You know, like
Right.
it's ultimately determined by you, your husband, the context you live in, and all these other things. So I talked about that. I wanted to be encouraging. I think there's a lot of androgyny and uniform thought in feminism that we can be like unintentionally just really unaware of. And I think the Christian vision and the Christian imagination for the home gets to be varied, and your home shouldn't necessarily look like mine or yours or anybody else that
Right.
you're positively influenced by. Just take the things that you see them doing And if it works for you and that's a great method for you, then great. And if you need to edit it, then great. And so anyway, that's what I talked about. I don't think everybody loved it. That's okay.
Well, I think a lot of times we so just want the list of
how to's,
like what when people see me, what should I look like, what should I be doing. And I mean, we're given a list in the Bible, but even that is many principles.
Yes.
So, you know, like, you know, not, you're not required, not everyone is required to own a vineyard. And yet, if you literally follow the list of a Proverbs 31 woman,
you better get a vineyard. Well,
how can I? So, yeah, I don't know. I think sometimes we find some comfort in the list, but it's really not.
Well, the list doesn't require wisdom. But this is, again, this is a whole topic that I really do want to spend time on. But we should say briefly too, thank you so much to the incredible number of women who joined us on Wednesday for our first meeting for Rosaria Butterfield's book, Five Lies of Our Antichristian Age. It's not too late to join because we're just talking about the introduction this week. So if you want to join us, we had over 100 women try to join, and then Zoom, I didn't know how to limit. So that's a lot. That's a lot of you. And I just want to say thank you to the people that want to go on this, journey with us. We're so happy to have you, and, we're going to not have that problem again. So if there's more than 100 of you that want to join us this week, we're ready for you.
Yeah.
Come what may. We were taken by surprise. I had no idea. We've never had that many people since we started using Zoom. So I had no idea that there was a cap on.
I had just forgotten. And the Ransom Trilogy got so intimate that we were just nowhere.
Yeah.
We were nowhere close to that.
No.
With the Ransom Trilogy.
Yeah. So thank you guys. And this is going to be excellent. I've only made it through, well, by the time you hear this, I'll be done, but I've only made it through the foreword because, well, I mean, I've read the book, but on the second time through, because the foreword itself was so encouraging, and there was like a lot there that I wanted to land on. I read it quickly last time. So the foreword was written by Kevin DeYoung. And we stan Kevin DeYoung around here. So anyway, you guys can leave us a voicemail at 470-465-0475. And I'm going to let you bring us into this one.
Okay. Yeah. Just like any single topic that we talk about nowadays, we've talked about it before. There's nothing new. But we have not done an entire episode on this, at least in my remembrance, which means we probably have done at least three. But regardless, we pick topics around here. Well, at least I pick topics, things I'm thinking of, things I am ministering myself in. So I'm just a regular Christian lady. That means I have to consider that if it's important to me, it will be valuable and helpful to you. So that's kind of how we do. I think when we first started Sheologians, we're like, what topics haven't we covered yet? But at this point, we've covered them all.
I don't know. I keep getting emails. Very specific. Very specific. I need you to talk about those emails. So we'll get there eventually. Just, it might take 20 years. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so this episode is based off of a conversation that we all know, and maybe you are one friend, maybe you have been the other friend, maybe you have been both. I think probably all of us have been both. But so the conversation kind of goes something like this. One friend friend is going through a hard time. And listening friend offers some counsel or wisdom or advice to help the situation. And then hard time friend ultimately at the end of the conversation says, "It's easy for you to suggest all that to me because you're not in my position."
Easy for you to say.
Right. Or like, "You don't know what I'm going through. So that's why you're," translation, "the reason why you're suggesting I do the right thing is that you don't realize how hard it is to do the right thing." So we got to talk about this. We have to. Because, yeah, you're either going to deal, like I said, you've probably been both, and this is something you may do internally. The faithful, spirit-filled part of you may be battling the self-pitying part of you, and you may even tell yourself, "Well, that won't work for me. That we, you know, that won't work because XYZ." So I have a few things to say. Well, you tell me your thoughts, and then we can move forward.
So I do think that there is the way that we've specifically talked about that, I think would be in two places on a cultural level. And that's because we've talked about standpoint epistemology and we've talked about intersectionality. And basically, inherent in intersectionality, there's this dogma that if you were me, then you would understand. And since you're not me, you don't understand. And of course, I'm not going to go deep into intersectionality right now because we're talking about essentially within the Christian household. And intersectionality is an anti-Christian view
Right.
of the world and knowledge and wisdom, because it essentially says that you can only have certain knowledge, that there's knowledge that's secret to each kind of person, a woman, someone who's disabled, someone who has certain skin colors. They have secret knowledge that's not available to others because of their experiences. But this is just a fleshly tendency, right? To say, like, you don't know me, you don't understand me. It sounds like to me that kind of like self-pitying teenager who's like, no one knows how hard I have it. And
Right.
we are so selfish and self-centered that I think we honestly believe that sometimes. Like, we honestly believe, like, I'm the only person who has gone through this. Like, I'm the only person that knows this pain. And, that's a very immature response. We've already said
Yeah.
here, there's nothing new under the sun. Like, there is nothing that you are experiencing that no one else has ever experienced. But
Right.
regardless of that, it's incredibly prideful to assume that the person who's speaking to you is so dumb that they can't even imagine it. Right. And the example I've given before is years and years ago. I was speaking to somebody about a situation I was in that they had not experienced. They had not experienced the situation I was in, but they were giving me biblical wisdom. And I was not willing to receive it. Ultimately, because they hadn't been in my position. This was like, again, this was like a decade ago. It was very immature. And I really appreciated her pushing back on that and saying, like, hey, you know what? I haven't gone through this, but here's what I know. Here's what I
Yeah.
know because of scripture. And so bringing it back to that standard of scripture was a wonderful, beautiful reproof that she gave me that was so helpful. I mean, that was really the Lord using her to minister to me and totally changed my mind completely, or at least opened my eyes to what I was doing because
Right.
I was doing that thing. where I was like, you haven't been through this, so
I don't
what's
want to
your
hear what you have to say, basically. Like, you can't. And I think that it's important. Well, you mentioned pride, you mentioned intersectionality, and it's important to note that a part of intersectionality is not just creating a distinction in experiences, it is elevating certain experiences over others. And the currency of humanity in our current secular philosophy is that experiences equal actualization. So you are more a more fully orbed human the more you have experienced. And so it's kind of a weird situation because generally you're dealing with something difficult. So you'd kind of think like, oh no, like I'm in this more lowly situation. But what intersectionality and all kinds of pervasive philosophical views nowadays do is we feel so sorry for ourselves that we must elevate us to, like, so even though we're depressed and non-functional, we are also simultaneously the most
wise.
right, because we have this insight that other people don't have,
And I
which
think
is
too,
often not true. Like, often, well, even I know we have both experienced it just in the context of sheologians. We have had people, we've spoken on a topic, and then people come in and they're like, you really need to consider that. Like, you need to consider how this is going to make people feel. And I think if basically insinuating or full on saying it's clear that you haven't experienced this, and in those situations, or often both of us have experienced it directly. And so that's just not saying you
We
don't know.
won't, we won't. I think you and I both decided, like, made the decision. I don't know if we ever, I think we have said it out loud to each other that we don't have to give our bona fides. Like, we don't, part of us not wanting to participate in the intersectional culture is the preamble of, hey, I have experienced this, so here's what I'm gonna say. Because my experience ultimately is not the standard of what is true or not. And so we just don't do that. I'm not going to air all of my experiences as a, here's why you should listen to me. I don't label myself that way. The only reason you should listen to me is if what I says what I say lines up with what God has said. And that's the only standard that matters.
Which means that I can absolutely encourage you in regards to something that I've never been through. Well, we've said this before too. In some ways, it helps to have someone who really understands. And in some ways, that distance emotionally between an experience and someone can really help. It can really help kind of cut some of that. So I think there is such a benefit to both. There's such a benefit to talking with someone who knows exactly what you're going through. And there is a benefit to talking with someone who has no idea, and that gives them just the emotional distance that's
Yeah, sometimes you
necessary
need
to be
that.
clear.
Sometimes you need that emote. And so yeah, I was gonna ask you that. I was gonna ask you, okay, so we are saying you do not have to have a prerequisite for speaking to a situation is not having gone through that situation yourself. Okay? We agree with that because our standard is scripture and not our personal experience. However, there are, in the Bible, when older women are commanded to teach the younger women how to love their husbands and run their homes and all that, that is a what I find interesting is it doesn't say like older married women. It doesn't necessarily imply that just married women. It's just older women. So I find that interesting. That essentially you're to look to people who have wisdom but experience in life as well.
Right.
I do think there's an aspect of older, wiser that's playing in there. But I do think it also, there is an assumption that these women, most of them probably have been married and have had children. That's normative. So in some situations, do you think gaining wisdom from somebody who has experienced it is n necessary?
Yeah, I think that that's helpful. I think we have changed, like, so, when I talk about the elevated status of people with certain experiences, there is some, well, you'll always see that in secular philosophy. You'll always see this accurate observation of humanity. All it took to get that was to look around and see how everyone behaves, and unfortunately, the conclusion is where we go off the rails. But yeah, it makes absolute sense that you would be able to administer certain wisdom about raising children and discipling children if you've done that a bunch of times. It doesn't necessarily equate, because some people have 10 kids, but they didn't get saved until their oldest was 25. And so, and but even then, there, I do think there's something, there's a different unique wisdom that can come from that. And so I definitely think that there is a usefulness and a beauty in the spectrum of experiences. It's just, we're not going to take that and elevate or diminish anyone based off of their experiences. And like you said, the Bible is the end all be all.
Standard.
So it
Yeah.
all of that, any of your wisdom that pertains to your direct experience or not, the standard of it is always the Bible. So yeah, I think it's really good to talk with someone that knows what you've been through. I think that's great. And I think that if you don't know what you're talking about and you're just talking to talk or give advice, which we're all very conditioned to do that in the age of social media, where we can all share our opinions so freely. Sometimes we just think, oh, it's my turn to share my opinion now. And that's, we can all get better at not just sharing. It's not about you. If your friend comes to you and is having a hard time, if you're sharing advice with the heart of, this is, I'm just making this about how good my advice is, then that's not good advice. or if you like, sometimes I do think in that same vein, if you have no experience in something and you're giving advice on it, it might come a little out of touch, but that's, there's always biblical wisdom to share with a proper loving heart. But yeah, it's just we've taken it so far. Well, we've created, so the conversation that we described is worldly. It's, if it's a Christian that you're having this conversation with, that's not a Christian way of thinking and needs to be corrected. So, something that I had kind of just like made, something I had put down in my notes was just, you, so like, what th in this conversation, what is this person really trying to say? The person who says, you clearly can't, like, you see my situation, but you don't understand my situation. If you were in my situation, you would never ask me to do what's right. That should sound nuts. That should sound nuts, because it is nuts. But usually the com it's not so clear. But so it's like, what are, in that situation, what is that person saying? They're, you can't expect me to do the right thing. I am exempt. I have earned, my situation has earned me an exemption from doing what's right. Now, in that statement, that doesn't mean I have, like, this, what I'm saying is not my situation has exempts me from doing what you think I should do. That's, those are two different statements. We're looking at someone who's saying they can't, a Christian saying, I cannot do what is right because my situation. And then again, here we're a few weeks ago, we talked about, I can't even remember, we talked about kind of a insult, like you don't realize it's insulting to the person you're saying it to. But what you're actually saying when you say that is to your friend is like, and if you were in my situation, you would also not do the right thing. And it's like, no. I'd like to think I would do the right thing if I was in this situation. And so you're kind of creating like a friend for yourself in it. You're just, you lie to yourself again. So first you lie to yourself and you say, this person has no idea what I'm going through, which is often not true. I would almost say 99% of the time. And I'd be willing to say 100% of the time, because even if they haven't gone through that exact situation, they have been through some sort of painful experience. And as long as they're coming to you as a friend who loves you, then their advice is to help your hurt, you know? But so, yeah, you have multiple lies. The second lie being that if everyone was in your situation, they would be behaving just like you.
Same way you are.
Yeah. So totally we're like, if we had one finger touching reality, like we're floating away now, right?
Completely untethered.
Well, and that's just not something we're not supposed to live by lies. That is if you're already in a hard, painful situation, the worst thing you can do. If you're in a happy, great, prosperous season, the worst thing you can do is lie to yourself every single day. That is a Christian should be allergic to telling themselves lies every day. But so something that I had written down is that ultimately what the person is saying is, this is too hard. This is too hard for me. But then I had this thought that was like, so there are two ways that the phrase, this is hard, too hard, can exit your mouth. And just keep in mind that what exits your mouth reveals what is in your heart. What mm-hmm. exits your mouth is not due to your circumstances and all this. It reveals what's in your heart. If you don't believe that, you don't believe the Bible. But so one of those ways is, this is impossible. There's no way out. I have to wallow in self-pity forever. God has forsaken me, which is something that I like, don't even want to say hypothetically. Mm-hmm. And so there's that way. But then just so you know, there is a faithful way to frame the phrase, this is too hard.
Yeah.
So you can say, this is too hard for me to do alone. Like, I must not rely on myself. I'm clearly not strong enough. God, please do it for me. I need to seek out the help of other people. So this is just, it's not like we're just saying like, oh, sorry, get used to it. Too bad. There's absolutely a way to say, this is too hard, to cry out, this is too hard for me. This is too much. So it's not about just never saying, this is too hard. It's about your heart and your faith while you say that. And I think we just were, if no one will tell you which one of those you're being, then you're lacking friends. But also it might be because you told them you don't care to listen. You don't.
Yeah, it might be because you don't really want friends who are going to confront that right. in you.
Yeah.
And that reveals the heart too. We've talked about like where you go for wisdom. If you go for wisdom, and where you go for wisdom actually determines what you want.
Right.
And I do think that there is a godly way. We are told in scripture, because you're absolutely right, there are going to be, you are going to be in situations that are too hard for you. That's a fact. Like, we're promised that. But what we do in that situation reveals what we actually want. Like, if we want wisdom, if we want help or if we want to stay in the mud and stay
Right.
in the hard. And we
Right.
just are mad that it's hard. And that is a, it's unbelief, ultimately. It's unbelief that the Lord is going to help you. It's unbelief. And, one of my favorite Paul Washer quotes is he's talking about how a lot of times people will go through hard things, really hard things, death of a child. He's up front lines with missionaries who are living, their lives are in danger. And, he sees the dark of the dark. And he was just talking about how it's when you can't see, it's when things are
Right.
so dark that you can't see the way out, that you can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. That is when your faith truly has sight. Like it has to be the eyes of your faith in those dark times where you're just relying on the word of God. You don't see it. Because you're literally in the dark. You don't see the way out. You don't know how this is going to be solved. You don't know when this pain is going to end. And it's in those moments where you have to have a childlike faith that you actually reveals what your faith and your hope is in.
Right.
And that is that's a blessing from God. That your dark times, and this is important too, your dark times are not, first of all, they're not forever because we believe that God is making all things new. So your dark times are not forever. They might feel like forever. And
Yeah.
many saints have gone before you through decades of dark, and they have just had to believe and practice those faith muscles and wait for the darkness to lift. And we have so many
Right.
psalms about that. We have so many, I mean, just look at the people in the Hall of Faith. She's so cute. Hi, Georgia.
Can we pause for a
Yes,
second?
let's
The
pause. I'll
one
pause
thing
it.
that I would actually need to interrupt for.
Yes, perfect. Pausing. Anyway, Georgia's good now. That was probably a sign to wrap it up anyway. I hope that's encouraging. I did have, I got to speak to some ladies again in Kentucky who, shared like they're going through dark times. Like they're going through hard stuff. And I'm willing to bet if you are a Christian, you can think of something right now that you are going through and you're tempted to believe, how can this possibly end? How could this ever get better? And I do think there are pains and trials that we go through that don't necessarily have an end until eternity. And that is a, but here's the thing, that's a reality for many of us. Like if that's true of your specific trial, that's true of many people's trials on earth, is that we are waiting ultimately for the day when all things are made new. We're looking forward to the resurrection. And I think the encouragement is just not to make the mistake of believing that you're alone, that no one knows. And trials can feel, particularly the really heavy ones, extremely isolating. And I think my encouragement is like, you need to stay close to the church. You need to stay close to your people. You need to stay close to the Lord through the word and prayer. You need to have that childlike faith in the darkness. And you need to know and have the hope that so many have had before you of people who've run this race. That the Lord really is making all things new.
Even if you were alone in your experience, everything we're saying is still true. You can't, the Christian does not elevate themselves through self-pity. They don't create for themselves a reality where they are exempt from faithfulness. And a reality in which you are exempt from faithfulness means God is not faithful. There is no, and that's ultimately what you're doing. We may see it as somewhat forgivable to create a reality where we excuse ourselves from our sin. But when you create a world that excuses you from your sin, you're also creating a world where God is not faithful and he's excused from sending his son to die for your sin. And so I think even if you can't do it for if you can't do it because a Christian should not be if you are immature, which you know what, there's a lot of benefit in just saying I'm immature. That's a part of saying this is too hard. That means I have not grown up enough to handle this. Like it's totally appropriate for Georgia to tell me she can't handle something that is grown up. And so there is the pride that excludes yourself from sin, the pride that elevates your situation over anyone else's experience. The counterpoint to that is humility, and just saying, I can't do this. This is too painful for me. This is too much for me. And just knowing that you may feel like that for a long time, but again, the circumstances, the thing itself, the amount of time that it exists for, those are all circumstantial. There, that doesn't. And the good news is that God doesn't. His faithfulness does not exist only in certain situations, and it does not only exist for a certain period of time. And if you go to a good church, I would say that's the same for your church. The church doesn't will not stop helping you. Now it may, that's another excuse that we make, I think, is sometimes like, well, they're just not helping me in the way that I need, which means they're not solving all the problems for me and making it feel better. There might be an intense amount of work that is required to, I mean, especially like we can also make a distinction. Sometimes you're in a hardship and it's no fault of your own other than that you just live on this sinful planet and it's like, huh, okay, well, that stinks. But sometimes you're in a situation because you need to make some changes too. And so yeah, I think that I think you if you are measuring everything based off of your experience, and this is going to take too long, and this is too hard. And so if you're, it's not okay to, it's okay to make the assessment. This is taking too long and this is too hard. But the conclusion at the end that, oh, well, then I guess the answer is I just can cope however I feel is effective to cope. Just that's not how Christians cope. That's not how, I could give you a book called Fair Sunshine full of people that were in a harder situation, Lord willing, than I will ever be in. And they were faithful to the end and longer situations than I will ever be in. But even then, it's like that's so it's not that circumstances count for nothing, because we can all appreciate that the longer and harder the situation, the harder it is, the more you need someone. It's not that it's nothing, and it's not that you just stuff it down and you just go, oh, well, theologians told me that I need to just eat my feelings and like and make that disappear. That's not what we're saying. If you say that that's what we're saying, you're lying again. But yeah, well, you should be embarrassed. I think, and I say that as someone who can remember the last time I used this the phrase, the last time I had the conversation, and I was embarrassed when I realized what I was really saying. And so it's fine. Be a little embarrassed for being such a fool, and then stop, and then love wisdom, love instruction. Don't be a fool. This is just, this is, and you know what? I can definitely tell you if you want to If you want circumstances to be everything, circumstances as a fool is way worse than circumstances wise. That's
I will,
just
yes, I will say
how it is.
I remember that moment too. And once my eyes were, once God used my friend to open my eyes to what I was falsely believing, that was a sin that was, the Lord was so gracious to just completely
Yes.
rip out.
Yes.
And so thank you, Taryn, and also the Lord, for that. And I will say that if this is something that you struggle with, are you praying about it? Like, is this something, because the Lord loves to give wisdom. So are you praying, like, Lord, change my heart? Don't let me believe this lie. Like, confess that you're believing this lie. Repent of believing the lie. He is faithful and just, and he will cleanse you from that unrighteousness. This isn't something you have to keep doing. Like, there's no sin that you have to keep doing. There's no lie that you have to keep holding on to. And I would say that if you're not in prayer, you're going to be much more vulnerable to these kinds of pitfalls. And like, are you praying? Are you praying boldly? Is it a part of your just normal circumstance? Like, okay, this temptation is coming upon me. I'm recognizing that I'm giving into this sin. Are you praying in those moments? More recently, this is on topic of prayer, not related necessarily to, like I said, that lie has been ripped from me, and I'm thankful for that. But just praying like every hour, Lord, I need you this hour. Like this, I need you this hour. Whether it's a hard hour, easy hour, just I need you this hour for whatever comes in this 1 hour. And you know what? I'm gonna pray that prayer maybe 45 minutes from now. Like, I need you this hour, and I need you this hour. And it's like, I think we underestimate. We do. I don't think, I know we underestimate prayer in our lives and what the Lord will work in us and through us when we're in prayer. And this is a topic that I truly believe. If you are convicted of this sin, I truly believe asking the Lord to take it from you is a yes prayer. Like, it is a yes prayer. Maybe you need to pray it more than once. Maybe you need to pray it 50 times. It's a yes prayer, and you can absolutely have victory over this sin through the Lord. And are you praying about it? Is there any sin in your life where you're like, this is so hard? I just like, are you praying about it? Are you praying about it? Litmus test number one. If it's, is it's too hard, are you praying about it? Because if it's that hard, you should be in prayer about it.
Well, and ultimately it's like, well, I can't pray because that won't fix it. And it's like, oh, so you're saying you have created this little trauma tower where you are so special that you are the prayers, like your prayers are the ones that God won't answer. Like, how special do you think you are? Because just that's the world. The world who hates God and claims he doesn't exist must create a world where they are elevated from needing God. So are you doing that? Is that what you're doing? Because you, I mean, bow low.
Lower, lower,
Low. Can you go
lower.
through the floor?
Yeah.
Can you go through the floor? Lower.
Wow, we really, I loved that. We ended that on a low note. Low note. Humble yourself before God. Go lower. I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry at all. Okay. Well, please join us at book club if you want. Or just support the show at patreon.com/theologians. Grab your copy of Five Lies of Our Anti-Christian Age. And it's a good time. You can leave us a voicemail at 470-465-0475. And we'll see y'all next week.
Yeah.
To know what I wonder, beyond the deep.